Hello, Amy Wheeler here with the Yoga Therapy Hour. This will be a solo episode. Some of you have told me you really like my solo episodes, so I'm doing a few more of those this year, especially because this year we are doing the eight limbs of yoga as a regulatory framework. And so you can't always find a guest who wants to talk about the eight limbs of yoga as a regulatory framework. And by regulatory, I mean regulating our minds, regulating our nervous systems, regulating our bodies, regulating our perceptions, regulating our relationships, regulating our connection to Mother Earth. So, a regulatory framework is quite broad. But today, what I'd really like to talk about is this idea that I think has maybe been lost in our field. We have really tried through our competencies. When you go through a yoga therapy school and you have to learn XYZ and all these different competencies, we've really tried to do this, but I think we're actually losing the golden thread. So what we're trying to do is, what is the philosophical lens of which yoga therapy interfaces with the world? Most licensed healthcare professionals and organizations have like a domain-specific problem that they're solving. And I think in yoga therapy, we've had a really hard time finding what is our domain-specific problem that we're solving. And I think it's because we have such a broad range of things that we work on, everything from light back pain to anxiety to insomnia to spiritual issues, disconnection from that which is sacred or precious to us, and so many people interested in social justice. So, we've got this really, really broad range of domain-specific problem solving that we're trying to do. And I'll kind of give you a few examples so you can see why it is that yoga therapy is having trouble figuring this out as a field. So, physical therapy, some of you call it physiotherapy, primarily addresses movement dysfunction, strength, mobility, and pain through biomechanical and neuromuscular models, right? That's what they do. Now, I know that some of them are also getting trained in mental health. It's not that there can't be subspecialties, but you have to agree on what is the basics of what we're doing here before we start branching off into the subspecialties. Similarly, occupational therapy focuses on functional capacity and what are the daily living skills? Brushing your teeth, combing your hair, cooking your food, cleaning your house, getting dressed. OT, occupational therapy, also focuses on sensory integration, which is a really big one, and maybe even environmental adaptation. How can you get around your house? How can you do the things that you need to do during your daily life? Then, if we go over to kind of the psychological counseling, psychotherapy type areas, you've got cognition, regulating emotions, working on behaviors that are maybe dysfunctional or no longer working for you, patterns in your relationship, and really looking at diagnostic frameworks like the DSM-5. You're going to get a diagnosis, and then there's a specific way that we might work with people, like cognitive behavioral therapy or DBT or EMDR. There's all these different diagnostic frameworks, but then also solutions. Last one I'll do, and I know there's so many others out there. I apologize if I didn't name yours. I'm just trying to give you an example of this domain-specific problem solving. The last one is social work, which kind of emphasizes the systems that we live in, the social systems that we live in, how to get resources for people who are in need, how to advocate for people who are in need, kind of like a psychosocial context. You're not alone in this. You are part of a larger web. So all of these fields have really been able to hone in on this before they start branching out into subspecialties. So the thing with yoga therapy We begin from a completely different question, and this is why we can't just take a psychologist or a PT or an OT or a social worker and add a little yoga in, teach a few yoga tools and techniques. Yoga therapy begins from a different question. Yoga therapy does not ask, what is broken? How can we fix it? What can we diagnose? What do we need to treat? Yoga therapy starts from a completely different lens. It's like putting on a totally different set of glasses. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour, Season 10. We are headed into the springtime of 2026. We have a spring in our step. We hope you do too. So let's go talk deeply about the eight limbs of yoga. Yoga therapy is asking things like, how are you perceiving the world around you? How are you perceiving your relationships? How are you perceiving yourself? How are you perceiving reality? How are you perceiving the divine? How are you perceiving everything, really? It's really about perception. And then how are you relating to this experience that you're having in this life? What are your patterns? Are you reactive? Are you over-identifying? Are you suffering? Are you finding joy? Are you attending and focusing or unable to attend and focus? These are all kind of mental, emotional patterns, which then lead to more physical patterns. And we might even ask from the lens of yoga therapy, what capacities do you have? What's available to you? And how can we strengthen those? So rather than organizing the care in yoga therapy around a single domain, like we saw in the others, yoga therapy is viewing the human system from a more holistic way and looking at the interconnected layers of the human system and how are they organized and how is it that suffering is arising from the disorganization of these five layers. The physical, the energetic, the mental, emotional, the relational, and possibly the sacred or the spiritual. When there's a disconnect or disorganization between those five layers, that's when suffering happens. So, yoga therapy isn't just providing techniques, we're actually providing a new perception and a more coherent worldview. It is spiritual, whether we want to call it that or not, it is spiritual. And I'll just give you one example. Many of the people that have come to me with back pain have been to all the PTs. They've even had surgery. They have looked at high and low, and finally they land in yoga therapy because it's the last stop and they don't know what to do. And while we can do a few little back bends like cobra pose or bridge pose, or it's not that we don't treat and work with or help people get to know their physical body, we do. But oftentimes, as we go through yoga nidra, as we go through meditation practice, as we start to control and regulate the breath, people have these aha moments about what the back pain is really about and what the pattern of sitting all day at a desk, working so hard to provide for your family, what is underneath all of that? That's what we mean by people relating to their own experiences, the relationship between perception versus what is objective reality. So it is an organic spiritual process that happens when we quiet down and come home to self each and every day, that our five layers come into a more coherent worldview. So this is the hard part. Like, we're not looking at domain-specific problem solving. We're actually looking at how to help people become more integrated from the inside out, from their inner self to their outer self. So what that leads us to is that we cannot just borrow Western medicines, tools, technologies, assessment processes we don't diagnose in yoga therapy. We can't just borrow them and then add a couple of breathing techniques or add a little bit of meditation. I'm not saying that people can't do that. That is a fine thing to do, but that's not yoga therapy, right? Yoga therapy is drawn from so many classical yogic models that help us explain the human experience and then guide which interventions we should choose. And it's these Indian philosophical models that are so valuable. And this is what I'm worried. If we as yoga therapists try to get into healthcare, are we going to throw away our models? Our lens? Are we going to throw away the glasses through which we see the world in order to try to fit in? And I think that's a huge mistake. And some might say, well, at my hospital, they don't want to hear about the classical model of the Panchamaya Kosha. Well, they don't need to hear about it, but you need to be knowing it and looking at the humans in front of you through that model. And you can say it in very different terms, even if you say the physical body, you and your mind should still know that's the Anamaya Kosha. Even if you say the, mental emotional, you should know, oh, that's the Manomaya Kosha, right? It's not that hard to learn the models and a few basic words. Now, you don't have to speak those to your clients, but you need to know them. So when we look at things like the Panchamaya Kosha model in clinical settings, we have to figure out how to be the translator. We are the bridge. But what I don't want us to forget is that the strength of what we're doing here in yoga therapy is that we are providing the holistic mapping of people's perception and experience. I'll say that again. Our strength in yoga therapy lies in the holistic nature of this person's experience. And we don't want to get into overly narrow interventions and diagnostics. So what we're really looking at is the integration of the whole person. And that's where we need to stay. And that's where big change happens. And let me tell you my theory on why big change happens. It happens because some of us can come in from the physical, some come in from the breath, the mental, the emotional, the relational, the spiritual. There's so many doors in to connecting with this other human being and being present to this human being. So we're not kind of pigeonholed into this specific domain. So the other thing that I want to say about yoga therapy, and again, the lens, the philosophical lens that we're coming through for this regulatory framework, as I'm calling it, is that we're looking at the whole person instead of the diagnosis. So, for example, we use something called the Guna model, and the Gunas offer a way to understand the different qualities of hot and cold and smooth and rough and dry and wet. We look at the person in terms of qualities of their mind, of their energy level, of their behavior. It's a holistic systems approach. And through that, clinically, we can actually use it to assess patterns of mood states, energy states, motivation, how much clarity we're having or lack of clarity. So the Guna model is really useful for recognizing the kind of daily fluctuations and how to encourage self-regulatory behavior where you realize, oh, I've gotten out of balance and I need to find my way back into balance. Oh, I'm having that feeling or that sensation again. What do I need to do to change directions? Or, oh, I'm having those ruminating thoughts again. What did I do last time to get rid of these ruminating thoughts? So the bottom line with this is that we have to have self-empowerment to do this work. We have to be self-reflective and self-aware. Whew. I mean, to find people who want to be self-empowered, self-reflective, self-aware, to tap into these ancient models of helping ourselves to feel better more of the time so that we can be of service, that's a big lens shift. Not everybody who comes in for healthcare is wanting more self-awareness. And you know what the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras say about this is usually it's not until we're suffering greatly that we decide we want to start reflecting on what is my part and why I'm suffering so greatly. So that's a whole nother part of the lens that cannot be forgotten. the lens of yoga therapy, when we're really looking at the philosophical lens of yoga therapy, the prerequisite is that you admit in a humble way, or I admit, that we have been suffering and we want to do it a different way, that this isn't working for us anymore, and that we're willing to do some of this really, really deep work inside of ourselves. Some of the other, you know, maps, philosophical maps that we use in yoga therapy, this is again our lens through which we see the world, are things like the Vayus, the five Vayus, which kind of provide a symbolic as well as functional way to understand what's happening inside of us. What sensations am I feeling in my lower abdomen? What emotions am I feeling in my chest and my throat? How am I limited in my movement? What are my breath dynamics? Holding my breath at the top of the inhale and puffing my chest out and walking around kind of braced all day? So when we start to learn about these five areas of the body and the functional ways to understand our sensations and emotions and movements and breath dynamics, this can create a really powerful way for us to have what I'm going to call embodied awareness. Now, why is that important? Because many people that have had a lot of trauma or chronic pain or difficulties in their life, they're not able to use their prefrontal cortex, the thinking, analyzing part of their brain that's so alive and well in so many intellectual people. It's almost like it gets shut down when we go through trauma. And by the way, most of us have had pretty significant trauma in our lives, as well as ancestral trauma, systemic and structural trauma. There's so many reasons that we have trauma. So when your prefrontal cortex gets shut down, you have to heal from this more energetic, embodied awareness of feeling the sensations and the emotions and the movement and the breath dynamics. And thank goodness we have neuroscience to support us now that much of the healing is going to come from what we call the bottom-up approach, from the body through the spinal cord all the way up to the brain to convince the brain it's safe, you're okay, you're going to be all right. So, you know, these energetic maps of the body, like the Vayus, that help us understand this embodied experience, those are some of the most powerful healing tools that there are. And the yogis have known this for thousands of years. So let us not throw away this philosophical framework. This is really important. And in fact, I would say Western psychology has now figured this out, and they're starting to figure out all about this bottom-up processing and how healing it can be. So, you know, I think we do have to acknowledge that these systems and these philosophical frameworks and models that I've been talking about can vary widely from lineage to lineage and different interpretations. They can be whitewashed. They can be taken down to something so simple that it doesn't work anymore. And they're hard to standardize and clearly articulate in a clinical or interdisciplinary setting. So we're going to have to figure out how to avoid those pitfalls and to do those things. But at the same time, it can be done. And I think all we really have to do is go in and show results. And then they'll start asking, what is that about? How did you do that? So many other people have tried and it didn't work. And suddenly you, using this more holistic approach, you're getting results that the other people didn't get. And you can just say, well, I'm not focused on a domain specific problem. I'm actually using it as adjunctive therapy, adjunctive tools that are all about regulating the nervous system, reducing stress, improving function, all those things. And then also talking about this kind of building a coherent worldview with all the layers of the human system, those interconnected layers of the human system. And it's because of the interconnection and not reducing it down to a domain, it's that interconnection that is giving us the results. So let us not throw that away either. Let's look at the whole person and claim it. Claim it. I can help people regulate body, mind, and spirit, because I'm looking at them holistically. Let's take just a little pause here to talk about our Ayurveda practitioner certificate at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. This Ayurvedic certificate program is 4 classes, it's 12 credits. It is an accredited university with federal financial aid available. We also accept the GI Bill. We would love for you to come on over and get a little bit of Ayurvedic expertise, especially if you're already a yoga teacher or a yoga therapist. If you'd like more information about our Ayurvedic certificate program, we do have open houses at Notre Dame of Maryland once a month, or you can email me and I can send you all the information. We hope you'll consider joining us for the Ayurvedic certificate program. All right, let's get back to the episode. So, when we look at our field of yoga therapy and how we can help ourselves get into healthcare, we need kind of what I'm going to call a unifying clinical framework. We have been lacking that. It's not that we all have to do it the same. We have Iyengar people, we have Kundalini people, we have Vinyasa yoga people, we have eclectic people. It's not that we have to do it all the same, but we do need a unified philosophical lens that can clearly define our theoretical foundation, that can name it, that we are looking at suffering and that we're helping people change their perception of themselves and the world through self-awareness, self-reflection, self-empowerment, and that we also have to provide kind of a developmental map to show people, okay, here's how it can work. That will translate into clinical reasoning. This is the bridge. This is the hard part. So many of us want to not do the clinical reasoning. Well, we're not going to get into healthcare then. So many of us want to jump over and use the lens of some other field. Oh, because they already have clinical reasoning. No, we have to provide our own clinical reasoning that stays within our scope of practice and stays within our philosophical framework. And you may be asking yourself, well, what could that single unifying clinical framework look like? And I'm going to tell you, it's already been written. It's already been done. Yoga Sutra of Patanjali is basically something that can lay out the clinical framework for yoga therapy. And what do you know? Second chapter of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra are the 8 limbs of yoga. We also have so many other things. I mean, even within the 8 limbs, we have our 10 commandments of how to treat others and how to treat ourselves, the yamas and niyamas. We have things like the kleshas, the 5 causes of suffering. There's so many things that can be mapped out clinically within Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, but what this is going to require is that we learn Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. We don't just cherry-pick little pieces of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra and say that's good enough. We actually have to put our heart and soul into this project. And, many people tell me, Amy, I've tried to read the sutras. They don't make any sense. I don't see a connection to health, healing, and clinical significance. So I've decided, and I started a few weeks ago, I'm going to write a book on this, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra as a regulatory framework for, yoga therapy. And show the clinical significance and why we all need to learn Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. So, when we're looking at sutras, we're looking at how does suffering arise within you, within me? How do we keep it going? What makes me keep doing that same thing day after day after day and suffering? And then I just do it again the next day. What happens if I do decide I want to reduce my own suffering? And then, how do I cultivate more freedom over time? Do you see how this is a holistic map? This is what we do. This is our domain. This is what we have to claim. So, basically, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra presents a very logical, grounded map for practice and discernment and seeing how we can suffer less. So, some of the key contributions of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra are a clear definition of what is suffering, things like misidentification, misunderstanding, reactivity, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra also shows us this beautiful explanatory framework for habitual patterning. And the words that are kind of associated with that, if you're curious, are kleshas, samskaras, vasanas, which I'm not going to go into right now. How do we stage a path for intervention? What do we need to do to shift our suffering? Of course, we have the regulatory framework of the eight limbs, which we're going to talk about for the whole year. And knowing that all of that leads to viveka, or getting more clarity about what is my contribution to my own suffering. And that's not to say there aren't other people contributing, there aren't other situations, our government. I mean, there's a lot of reasons we suffer, but ultimately the one we have control over and the one that yoga is focused on is, how can I suffer less and taking responsibility for my own suffering so that I can go out there and be of service to the world and help others also? So basically what we're doing in yoga therapy is, it's not just symptom management. Oh, your low back hurts. Oh, you can't sleep. Oh, you have anxiety. That's wonderful. Most people want that. They want those symptoms managed. But there's a whole nother layer that I call a reorganization of the inner landscape. And I wrote a chapter about this in a book a couple of years ago. The book was by Finlayson and Highland Robertson. They have, it's kind of like a textbook for yoga therapy. Some of you may know it. I cannot remember the name. I think it's Foundations of Yoga Therapy, something like that. And I wrote about this, that through yoga therapy, we are reorganizing the inner landscape. And so many people have told me that that phrase of, I'm going to reorganize what's going on inside of me, has been so helpful to them to have something tangible to know what they're doing. And it's not a control thing. It's not, you're bad, we have to fix you. It's a perception thing. It's a, I want to be self-empowered. I want to feel better more of the time. And I'm willing to explore deep inside myself to figure out why I keep stepping in the same potholes day after day after day, expecting a different result and not getting a different result. So that's what we mean by this reorganization of the inner landscape. And it's something that only the client can do for themselves with the guide on the side, which is the yoga therapist. So I'm giving you a lot of words to use, and you're going to have to figure out how they translate into your setting, whether you're in a sixth grade classroom or in a hospital or in a pain clinic, an eating disorder clinic. There's so many different ways that we have to translate our language into those settings. And I think it all starts with figuring out, what do those people need? What do they need? And then translating what I'm saying into the language that they can hear. So a couple more things I want to say to frame our next year, this yoga therapy as a regulatory framework and, you know, reorganization of the inner landscape of the client and ourselves, because of course we are always practicing this lifelong practice too. That when we take this into a clinical setting, it is a philosophy that we're looking at, the philosophical lens, but it's also an applied practice. The Yoga Sutra is a guide for daily living. It doesn't remain abstract. It's really, how do you wake up in the morning and feel better more of the time? And so the Yoga Sutra, if we look at it as a clinical foundation or framework, it helps us figure out how to assess people. There's a four-step model that TKV Deskachar has come up with called the Vyuha model. How do we do goals, short-term and long-term? How do we pacify the pain before we start getting to the root cause, shamanam and shotanam? How do we sequence these practices to make sure that they actually don't hurt people? How do we assess readiness? How do we assess capacity before we begin? How can we understand progress? What does it mean when someone is making some progress? So the Yoga Sutra doesn't remain abstract. It's answering these questions. And most people that I talk to, they have not read a version of the Yoga Sutra that has explained that. And Thankfully, because I've studied in India with my teachers for 25 years, that oral tradition, that one-to-one tradition has taught me these things, but it's usually not taught in a book. It is through that long-term study that you can understand how to assess readiness, capacity, as well as what's going on in the person, how to set goals together, how to track progress. That takes some time to learn. Here's another thing about Yoga Sutra and this philosophical framework. We're not just looking to reduce symptoms, although that's really nice if you no longer have back pain or you can suddenly sleep. I mean, those things do happen. But really, that's one stop on the journey. Yoga Sutra, what that's really doing is inviting deeper inquiry. And I'm even going to say the S word, spiritual inquiry. It's about getting clarity about our lives and how can I be less reactive, noticing when we're being reactive, watching ourselves be reactive, watching the results of ourselves being reactive. How can we be more skillful? How can we get done what needs to get done and be more skillful about it and cause the least harm to ourselves and others, but still get the job done? It is precision that we're looking for. Other inquiries that the Yoga Sutra is asking us to look at is, how do I become more steady? How do I become more self-aware? How do I become more self-reflective? How do I have more faith in the process and keep going and walking one step at a time towards something good? Other things that Yoga Sutra kind of asks us to think about of a deeper philosophical reflection is, how do I gain more freedom? More freedom. What does freedom even mean? It means inner spaciousness, where we're not feeling so tight and contracted all the time and having dukkha. Yoga Sutra is telling us how to find more inner spaciousness for this reorganization to happen. And that's what we mean by freedom. Doesn't mean we get to just, you know, run off and forget our family and go on a 3-year trip around the world. That's not freedom. Freedom happens inside of you through the spaciousness that you feel. Other things that Yoga Sutra is asking us to inquire about are, what are my choices? How do I have more choices? How do I make wise choices? So, you know, this is all to say that these deep inquiries are not always in alignment with biomedical and psychological measures, but they are adjunctive. They are complementing them. And strangely, I think make them work even better if you're with a psychologist or a PT or an OT or a social worker. This is complementary and it actually makes those things function better. They're often invisible. They're hard to measure, but they're deeply meaningful to a well-lived life. So, you know, I think this is why we're having a little trouble defining our lens, because we are complementary. One last thing I want to talk about is, we run parallel to these other healthcare modalities. We're not a replacement. And for this reason, I think we belong in healthcare on the health education side, on the behavioral health side, on the worksite wellness side, on the burnout side, on the stress reduction side. I'm not saying we can't do really great work also on the medical side of healthcare. It can happen. But most of the people that are working on the medical side in healthcare are doing it through endowments, meaning somebody gave a whole lot of money to hire a couple of yoga therapists because that person who was very wealthy wanted to endow that position. And that's not a sustainable business model for our field. If you look at the number of hours that we have been trained, which is about 800, it's kind of equivalent to maybe a medical massage therapist. And if you look at the pay that maybe a medical massage therapist or someone else with about 1,000 hours of training has gotten, you're looking at $17 to $26 an hour. And for most of us, we had this idea we wanted to be paid more than $17 to $26 an hour. But that's the reality out there for the level of training that we have. So I think if we head over to the health education side, the behavioral health side, the worksite wellness side, now we can start looking at $40 an hour, $45 an hour, almost twice as much. We don't need to have a license, and we can still use the billing codes over on that side, which is great. That means our bosses can bill for our time and get paid for that time. So just a thought that if we put ourselves into healthcare as a parallel or adjunctive track that helps all the other stuff function better. It sews everything together. It's holistic. It takes everything and makes it more coherent. Then we can find a place for ourselves in healthcare. This parallel. We're not a replacement. We're not this new modality. We're helping all the other modalities function better. Whereas some of the other fields are asking how to fix or correct or manage symptoms, we're asking how do we see more clearly, how do we relate differently, and how do we act with discernment? Those are not sexy things to put in the marketing material. You're going to have to translate that. So for instance, if you're at an eating disorder clinic, you're going to have to translate that. How do you help the young man or woman in the eating disorder clinic understand that what they see in the mirror is actually not who they are, and that the perception they see in the mirror may not even reflect reality? And even beyond that body that we're seeing in the mirror, there's something so much deeper inside of them that they can connect to. So that's just one example of how are you going to translate this into your setting? And you are the translator. You are the one who has to figure it out. You can't just stay with all the yoga words and expect them to know what you're talking about. You have to be able to translate it into their language. So the bottom line is that if we want this unified framework where we're all working from, we all can use different tools, we can stay connected to the tools we love, but we need the unified framework. Again, I'm going to argue for an entire year here that the Yoga Sutra of Patanjali is that coherent, ethical, and even a clinically applicable framework that really honors the depth of yoga philosophy while meeting the realities of modern medicine. It's practical. As I said, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra is a guide for daily living. And it's not just theoretical. It's not out there somewhere. It's actually in here. So with that, I just want to close up today. I want to encourage you all to get a copy of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. Some people ask me, you know, what ones do I recommend? And I would say, you know, TKV Deskachar, The Heart of Yoga. However, that one actually hasn't been translated into yoga therapy. You know, the way that I learned how does Patanjali's Yoga Sutra connect to yoga therapy was through one-on-one oral teaching. So I can even hold up another book called Reflections of the Yoga Sutra by TKV Deskachar, and it's wonderful. And you should get this book and The Heart of Yoga, but it doesn't do the translation into yoga therapy. The one that I think does the best job of really helping you see what does this mean to yoga therapy is this one called Embodying the Yoga Sutra by Ranju Roy and David Charlton. This one actually helps you translate it into what does Yoga Sutra mean in terms of the philosophical framework of yoga therapy. So that's the one I would get. And as I said, I've decided I need to write this next book. It'll take me a couple of years, but I'm on it. So in the meantime, you know, Marlisa Sullivan and I are writing a new book that will come out in the summer of 2026 called Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. And that book will also help you really understand how yoga therapy is looking from a completely different lens. It's very akin to much of what we talked about today. So that will have to suffice until we can get the other Yoga Sutra book written. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for being here today. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. I hope I've given you some things to reflect upon. and ways to move ahead with learning more about Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. And of course, the entire year of yoga, the Yoga Therapy Hour is going to be about this topic. All right, we'll talk soon. Thank you. Thank you for being a listener of the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We have done over 200 episodes, and we have had over 200,000 downloads. And we hope that in some small way, we have supported you mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. If you'd like to support the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast in 2026, there's several meaningful ways you can do so. First, you can become a member of our Patreon community and donate as little as $5 a month to keep the podcast going. Your contribution helps us to sustain the depth and quality of conversations on the podcast. A second option is that you become an Optimal State mobile app member for both Android and iPhone. Again, this is about $5 a month, and we're going to start providing a lot of amazing content on our mobile app in 2026. We'll definitely want you to be part of that community. We also have a book coming out called Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. This book will be published by Routledge Publisher in spring 2026. It's written by Amy Wheeler and Marlisa Sullivan. We hope you'll consider purchasing this book when it comes out in the spring of 2026. Again, the name is Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health by Wheeler and Sullivan. For those of you who are seeking advanced training in therapeutic yoga or in yoga therapy, please consider checking out the programs at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. We have a MS in yoga therapy, and we also have a post-master's degree therapeutic yoga for licensed healthcare providers that's starting in the fall of 2026. In addition, we have a comprehensive Ayurveda certificate program also geared towards licensed healthcare providers. Each one of these programs is a pathway designed to support healthcare professionals and yoga teachers and yoga therapists who are ready to integrate these teachings into clinical, education, and community settings. All right, thanks for listening and thanks for supporting the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.